I just got like suddenly really sleepy, guys, so I apologize.
Oh, okay. Well, like,
I don't know what's going on. It's like in my brain.
Let's just end the show then.
Let's end it. Like, I'm a little sleepy. Let's call it a night.
See you guys
next week.
Yeah. All right. Peace. Good talking to you, Nerd Appropriate. Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 258, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And we're here to do a pretty regular episode, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Guys, nice. I'm excited. I actually did stuff. I went to a movie and stuff. It's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. We a little behind the scenes, we postponed once, for none of us had done anything in a week.
Right, absolutely.
You know, family stuff. I was sick. Scott was traveling. Happens.
Things come up. Yeah.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
A lot of moving and shaking going on.
Yeah.
Especially the shaking. That's actually all I did was shake the whole time that we missed an episode. I was like, please come back. I need to do another episode.
You know what's weird is that I still feel like there's something that I did and I can't remember what it is. So.
Oh, yeah. What will happen is I will get either a third of the way through this episode, or I will think of it tomorow morning. I'll be like, "Oh God,
I know what it is."
This
there.
What did you do?
I played the For Honor. That's the thing.
Oh,
I
played that too.
We all did that.
Okay, so about that. That's the thing I forgot. I knew there was something like significant that we didn't put. So okay. Let's plan the show on the show.
Let's do it.
Let's do the rundown.
This week on the podcast, we'll talk about some things that we played and saw this week, including the For Honor beta. I played a game called Toby the Secret Mine. Ash saw Resident Evil, the final chapter. Is Riverdale a film as well?
No, it's a TV show.
TV show. And then Matt watched season two of The Expanse.
Yep.
And then we have some news and we'll talk about what we've been up to. And we'll just have a good old time and just escape from the
reality.
Yeah, the news
open
for a while.
Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see.
Oh, I want to sing so loud, but I got a sleeping midget in my house.
Mm-hmm.
How can you not sing that at the top of your lungs?
Right. Well, I was at the quiet part. You could have. We could have all. Do you all want to whisper that?
Just a poor boy. I need no sympathy,
cause it's easy come, easy go. Little high, little low.
Is that song like even separable anymore from Wayne's World? Is that possible?
I mean, like, I still sort of picture Queen, but like, it's definitely forever linked, right, to Wayne's World.
I was actually talking about Wayne's World today. Someone was asking me like what Twitch basically was, and I'm like, it's like everyone pretending they're Wayne.
Yeah.
From Wayne's World.
Like a distributed cable.
Right.
What's that called? Public access. Distributed public access.
You just make your show up and do your little Wayne's World show, which I used to do with my VHS recorder as a 10-year-old. Yeah. So.
Not bad. That's a good description.
I've said this many times, but you know, like, I probably haven't told the listeners this, but in high school I made like quote unquote comedy videos, right? In high school.
I'm pretty sure this has come out on the podcast.
Well, I mean, the thing is that like that happened before there was YouTube, and that's like, it's like too bad that I couldn't release that stuff now to YouTube because it's all, has copyrighted music in it, and that would never.
Man, we could run deep into the issues of growing up in Florida and all of us wanting to be, I think, in some fashion of the entertainment industry and not knowing that those were jobs you could have, like, as real adults.
That's very true.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Like, TV was just like a magical thing that happened somehow.
Oh, for sure.
Like, you had no idea there was like a whole industry around it with people writing and producing.
I don't even think I saw a famous person until I was like 20. Oh my God. It's the guy from Star Trek.
Yeah. I think the most significant thing that happened, at least in my circle, was that I went to the same church as Hulk Hogan.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, because he was in Tampa, right?
Yeah. And he only showed up to the main events, if you will. and no one bothered him, but that's,
you can tell we're very religious as a group.
Yeah.
He only showed up to the main events,
you know, the big ones.
Like SummerSlam.
He only came to like SummerSlam and WrestleMania, and then he would skip, like, you know, he'd skip Royal Rumble and the other ones, you know. Hell in a Cell, he wouldn't come to that. So,
oh man, Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell.
Classic. Yeah. Classic.
Yeah.
Classic. Well, this episode is brought to you by Loot Crate. Loot Crate is constructing a crate of monumental proportions, and to do so, they've recruited some of the best builders, mighty morphers, and tower shapers from pop culture's most put-together franchises. Roll up your sleeves and get ready to build. This month's crate features items from Batman, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Lego, Tetris, and more. So head on over to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code ratedNA and get 10% off, help out the podcast, and support us, as well as getting a box full of awesome to your doorstep.
And I hope the Tetris loot from Loot Crate is just the long piece. Like, just the long Tetris piece.
It's just a Lincoln log.
It's like one long plastic Lego. It says Tetris on it.
Yeah. It's the long piece is just made from recycled DVDs and Blu-rays of Pixels starring Adam Sandler.
Perfect. Oh, burn. Perfect. Adam Sandler burn on the Rated NA podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And I have him booked for next week.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
We're going to have to explain this one now. Ash, what have you been up to?
Oh man. So, if I sound like I'm talking softly, it's because I have a child that is, pretty young and will not sleep at night. So I've been, fighting to get like whatever sleep I can this week. It's weird. He like is going through what they call sleep regression, which means that he just kind of sleeps for like an hour and a half at a time, 2 hours at a time, which is like nuts. So, it's like kind of becoming
relearns everything person. Again.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's just because he's at the stage where he's like learning so quickly and like, you know, almost walking and all that crazy stuff. Mm. So that's been not fun. But I did get a chance to sneak off to the movies. I went and saw Resident Evil, the final chapter, which I'll talk about in the review section. I got to play Overwatch with these guys, and we've been playing the Year of the Rooster DLC and all that fun stuff that they put out, which was really fun. So we played some Capture the Flag, and I've been trying to collect all the Year of the Rooster skins before they're gone in a couple weeks. Still continues to be pretty damn awesome. I love me some Overwatch. What else did I play? Oh, I fired up XCOM 2 again the other night.
Oh, you did it.
Yeah, because they put out this thing called The Long War 2, and it's really kind of a cool story. There were a bunch of modders for not the original XCOM, but the XCOM that came out a couple years ago, and the modders actually made a mod called The Long War. And the XCOM team liked it so much, they actually hired the modding team to be part of the XCOM team. And then they actually did an update to The Long War called The Long War 2. And it's available to download for XCOM 2. And it has, you know, all new units, all new skins and cool stuff like that, and new enemy behaviors. And they basically made an extended campaign for XCOM 2. So I was checking that out, and it's still, you know, absolutely fantastic. I realized with like the incredibly limited time I have now, there's no way I can play through it again. I made it like halfway through one mission, and I was like, oh, that was the time that I have to play right now. So something like Overwatch, where you can play like a 5 minute match and feel like that itch scratched, is kind of more my speed these days. Did play a little bit of the For Honor beta, which we'll talk about in the review section. And let's see what else. Oh, a lot of my shows kind of came back that I was watching. So, you know, all the shows took their little winter break, and they started coming back. So catching up on the CW shows, and you know, all the superhero shows are back, which is super cool. I watched the Kevin Smith directed Supergirl episode, which was fun. If you're not a big fan of Supergirl, he did direct, the return from the winter break episode, which is called The Return of Supergirl, I want to say. And it was really fantastic. His daughter kind of makes a cameo in it. So you get to see Harley Quinn Smith in the episode, and, he does really well with TV stuff. I feel like since he's such a big fan of like comic books and everything, he captures really good. One thing, okay, so here's just a quick little blurb about Kevin Smith. If anyone who grew up in the 90s, like, Kevin Smith was like a god, like Mallrats and Clerks, and he just wrote really for the time. The dialogue was absolutely fantastic. And then as we got older, we're like, oh man, like, what is going on? They're pretty hard to rewatch. I mean, for the 90s, it was just spectacular.
I feel like I've seen Dogma like 50 times.
Right. No, yeah. Me too. I mean, like all of his movies were like that. But one thing he did great in those films is he captured really great moments between two characters having a conversation. I feel like he really excelled at that.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. He does that in these CW shows that he directs. So he'll have, you know, just a really great poignant scene between like Kara Danvers and her sister sitting on the couch having a conversation that stands out from other, you know, other episodes with where the characters are having conversation. You're like, oh, this is definitely like a Kevin Smith conversation interjected into the world of, you know, Supergirl, which I just think is fantastic. So it's cool that we're getting that. And what else? I watched the pilot for the new show, Riverdale, which I'll talk about in the review section, which is an Archie TV show. And I think you might be surprised what I think about it. So let's go to Scott.
Let's see. So I'm still going through the Watch Dogs 2 campaign, having fun with that. I played the For Honor beta, which we'll talk about later. And I played some Overwatch with you guys. And I think I unlocked maybe like one or two of those special skins, but not necessarily for the characters I play, but it's still really cool. And I actually did watch that movie Arc that I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, the one that's on Netflix and stars the actress who plays Jessica Jones' best friend on the show. I can't remember her name. So I don't want to...
Walker.
What's that?
Patty Walker is the character's name.
I don't know the actress's name, but the I don't want to like say too much about the film, but I will say that I did enjoy it. It kind of has an indie vibe to it that while it's not like the same movie, I would say that if you enjoyed the movie Cube, you would probably like certain aspects of this film.
God, I love Cube. I think Matt and I were talking about Cube like 2 days ago.
Well, you know how like.
What did I just?
The Clone Wars, I think, right?
Clone Wars, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess what I'm talking about is sort of the intimate nature of a movie like Cube, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And
smaller.
Yeah.
In scope.
Yeah, it feels smaller in scope. So that this movie's like that, and does some things with, I don't know, it's sci-fi. I don't want to like say too much about it because you'll quickly like understand what the film is about as soon as you see it. But I would say it's definitely worth your time. Don't go in expecting, you know, some kind of blockbuster or something that's going to be, it's not going to become this like film that is like put up on the shelf, but as a thing that you can watch, it's like very good. So I would highly recommend it. It's not what I thought it would be. So it turned out to be, I was surprised, pleasantly surprised. And so I think that's pretty much all I did. I spent like most of today waiting for Fire Emblem Heroes to be released, which is the new mobile game from Nintendo. So we can kind of get into that a little bit later. But
mobile as in tablet, like iOS?
Yeah, they put out a Fire Emblem. Yeah,
Fire Emblem
Heroes. No way.
Fire Emblem Heroes. Yeah, but it's like full IAP, I guess. So we'll have to...
You're going to have to tell me what IAP is.
In-app purchase.
Oh,
it's
right.
It's like microtransaction laden, unlike Super Mario Run, where it was like just like.
We'll talk about
it. Yeah, we'll talk about it later. So that's good for me for now. So let's talk to Matt.
I just got like suddenly really sleepy, guys. So I apologize.
Oh, okay. Well, like.
I don't know what's going on. It's like in my brain.
Let's just end the show then.
let's end it. Like, I'm a little sleepy. Let's call it a night.
see you guys
next week.
Yeah.
All right. Peace. Good talking to you, nerdappropriate.com. Nerd Appropriate Twitter. Melissa and I have been catching up on a bunch of TV, so a bunch of programs that we had to finish still, and then we started Westworld this past week.
We're
five episodes in.
Here it's slow as molasses.
It's man, how to have you watched it, Scott?
I have not.
Okay. It's
I've seen the original.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a lot of the coolness of the first half. Do you remember the original really well? Because the original is sort of two different movies. It's like the sci-fi first half of the movie that's all about kind of like what's going on at this park, and it's kind of sci-fi mystery.
Yes.
And then like the ending of the movie is like a straight up chase scene. Like it's just a weird like bad guy on the run.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the same way that Logan's Run is two movies, you know?
Yeah. It was that 70s, 80s era
with the twist. The twist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show is, it's, first of all, it's, you know, it's HBO. The production quality is insane. Like, it's just immaculately put together. And the acting is really good. And, you know, everybody in it is awesome. The setting is Western, which is nice. It's just, it's one of those shows that speaks in code a lot to, like, hide truth from the audience, you know? And it always rings really false to me. And it's something that, it's just kind of a pet peeve of mine. So, like, Mr. Robot, actually, a show I love. Season 2 of Mr. Robot did this really heavily. And the reason is because season 1 got you with that twist, right? Like, season 1, they were able to create an untrustworthy narrator because, like, you didn't know that you weren't supposed to trust him. And you kind of always naturally trust the narrator. So then season 2 comes around and you have to kind of, like, talk around truth so that people don't know immediately what's going on. Whereas, like,
yeah, it's the problem of just people not saying what an actual human would say in a conversation.
Correct. Yeah. It'd be like, if we were on this podcast too. And we were just like, Matt, what were you up to this week? And I was like, well, I did some things and some stuff. And, you know, that one game. And then you guys would be like, yeah, that one game. And I'd be like, okay, yeah, that one game was great. And then you're like, oh yeah, that one game was great. And then, like, we just stopped. And, like, that's not how people talk. Like, you just don't. It's like an unnatural way to converse. And so the show does that a little bit, but it's not too much. There's a lot to guess at, you know, in the show as to what's going on. And it is done really well. Like, I would heavily recommend watching the show if you haven't watched it yet, because it is very good. It's just that happens, and that's a pet peeve of mine. So what else did we catch up on? A few other things. Started The Expanse, watching Top Chef, best competition show on TV. I don't know, I like it. Yeah, and then just otherwise, like, you know, fall TV kind of back in full swing after the winter break, and that's all been pretty good. We've talked a little bit about S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff. I believe
that Powerless starts tonight.
Powerless starts tonight, yeah, while we're recording. Yeah, so while we're recording. Not had a chance to see that yet.
DVR that.
Yep, looking forward to watching that.
What else? Played some Forza. I only bring this up because I told Scott to do a thing that he hadn't done yet, which never happens in video games for me.
I kept hearing about it, and I was like, I don't even know how to start doing this.
Yeah, so when you're driving, if you play Forza, here's a hot Forza tip for you. Two things. One is just a way to gain experience and do stuff, which is the convoy. And the way a convoy works is when you're driving around, just in regular drive-around mode, you know, like you're not doing anything special.
Mm-hmm.
When you pass cars, you can press down on the right stick and you'll honk your horn.
Okay.
And when you pass other, and it can't be regular cars, but they have to be like the fake NPCs, you know, like the other fake players or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you honk your horn at them, they'll honk back and then start following you. And then when you put together like four cars, it's a convoy.
Oh, that's cool.
Of your cars driving together. And then you can gain more experience. It'll offer you like races while you're driving. And the races seem pretty well tracked towards where you're headed. So like, you'll be headed to a destination. You'll have like a convoy of six cars with you. And one of them will be like, hey, do you want to race to this location? You can just say yes. And then it just becomes a race to the location. And
that's awesome.
And keep going where you're going.
Can you convoy with like other actual players?
I would assume. I haven't really played online at all. So I would assume yes, but I have no idea how that would work. I mean, they would have to just choose to drive with you, I guess.
I mean, the game does so good at being fake online that like there's not really a need to play online if you don't want to.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I just kind of like, because that game is my like pick up and play for however long I end up sitting there.
Oh yeah,
kind of
for
game,
sure. Yep.
Which might be 2 hours and it might be 15 minutes. So, but what I found was really fun. There are two really fun things you can do. One is, so like in the game, the NPCs will match whatever car you're driving. So if you get in like a slow three-wheel BMW, like, you know, top speed of 40 miles an hour car, like everybody else will be in their slow top speed 40 miles an hour car. It's not the same exact car always, but it's like matched to your car. And when you do that, if you get in a really slow car and then enact the races or do anything along those lines, it ends up being really, it's like a really fun way to drive boringly in the game and enjoy it still. So
yeah,
like that's pretty fun. And then the other one that I actually messaged you about, Scott, that is absolutely insane looking and really fun is, if you get a barn find, and for those who don't know, a barn find is when like the game will kind of alert you to a specialty car that's in like a barn and it's all broken down somewhere. And it'll give you like a location that's kind of out in the woods. You just drive around looking for this barn. It doesn't give you the specific barn. It just tells you this is the area that the barn's in. So you have to kind of drive around and look for it. It usually ends up being like a lot of off-roading.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better if you're in your like Ford F-150 or like, you know, off-road vehicle of some sort.
Like a hidden vehicle off the beaten path.
Yeah. Any vehicle that can handle off-roading is like 1,000 times better than the Lamborghini that you're probably driving around because it's fast as shit. Yeah. And that's the way you can get around mm-hmm. quickly. But I had picked up a convoy of like 7 supercars. So it was all like McLarens and Lamborghinis and all these just ridiculous high end cars.
Like in the mud.
And I got a barn find and we were just like hauling ass through this forest essentially. So there's 7 like supercars like spinning out and hitting trees and like driving all over the place, like trying to like summit hills and all this.
Oh my God, you should have recorded that.
I should have. I wasn't thinking, but it was the funniest thing I had watched like in the game in a long time. Just the visual. Even Melissa was laughing at it, who was just kind of like half watching while she was on her phone or something. So it was really fun. The game still maintains its level of entertainment still to this day. I'm shocked. I'm glad Scott played it because I would have never picked it up otherwise. Yes. And it's really awesome.
Always happy to play. Always happy to play.
Yeah. Playing a bunch of Hearthstone, that is still super fun, collecting the stuffs. I really like tavern brawls. They tend to break up the monotony of the game and
yeah, they're fun
and add a lot to it. Overwatch with you guys, and then picked up Fire Emblem Heroes, so we can talk a little bit about that in a little bit.
News.
Okay, so as we alluded to earlier, some Nintendo news. The first thing I want to start with is Super Mario Run. Apparently, there were some sales figures that were released for Super Mario Run.
Yeah.
It would seem that the game had 78 million downloads since its release in December 15th, but only at a 5% conversion rate for the $10 payment, which, like, you know, poor Nintendo, that's like $53 million in revenue. that they generated from the game, but they expected twice as much. So, you know, again,
I thought they still said they generated more than $53 million in revenue for the game. Was that wrong?
Well, I mean, if you take, you know, 5% of 78 million and multiply that times 10, that's kind of like, where you end up with, I suppose.
Yeah. But isn't there other purchases in the game as well?
I guess there are, but they're not important. You know, I can't imagine a lot of people buying buying tickets. I'm not sure you can buy those tickets, to be honest with you. I don't remember. But
you're right. 53 million.
But once you get far enough into the game, like Toad Rally tickets kind of multiply to the point where you max out at 100. So it's not a problem. So I just thought that was interesting. They also updated the game with an easy mode, which I kind of feel like is a good idea. Because I could see a lot of people getting frustrated with the difficulty of the game and just saying like, well, I'm not going to pay for this because it's too challenging, I suppose.
Right.
So they added this easy mode that once you fail a stage, you have the option of going through the stage with basically unlimited restarts and no timer. So you can just kind of explore the stage. But I think it doesn't actually record your coin tally. So if you're, you know, tracking your progress against friends, it doesn't like track with the leaderboard, I guess, for that level. So, that's kind of unusual for them. It's not super unusual for them to do because they started introducing, help features into some of their other Mario titles. But I really feel like this is more of a concession, you know, in reaction to the sales, basically saying, hey, you know, this game was pretty challenging. And if you're just looking for a casual experience, you can have that now, which I think is probably good in the long run because, you know, I completed the game and at this point Toad Rally is kind of getting stale and there's just not a lot to do. They added like this, like 2-week-long event where you could replay some of the levels and they hide these like golden Goombas inside of levels. And if you defeat so many of them, you can add extra statues to your town and stuff like that. But really once you complete the game, I feel like there's not a whole lot to do, which is too bad. But for what it was, you know, in my opinion, worth the $10. So, so that was the pre-news. I guess the current news is that today Fire Emblem Heroes came out, which is the mobile version of the Fire Emblem IP. It came out on iOS and Android at the same time.
Did it come out on Android this time?
Yeah, okay. Unlike Super Mario Run. The thing that's, I guess, was frustrating for a lot of people is that it was released to pretty much like every region except North America earlier today, you know, as in, you know, 10 hours early. And it actually came out on iOS before it was released to, or it came out to Android before iOS, so people were frustrated. I haven't actually been able to do anything other than download the game and turn it on, so maybe you could tell us a little bit about it based on your...
Yeah, I played the two like prequel levels on the way in. Like, it's kind of like the tutorial, I guess.
Yeah, Nintendo's a big fan of those tutorials.
Yes, so I didn't get to the in-app purchasing part, which I'm sure... I don't know if it's a timer based thing or how they lined it up. I don't know if you have info on that.
But, I do have a little bit.
But the game looks great, and it looks very Japanese strategy RPG. When you fire it up, like, it's going to feel real familiar if you were a fan of Final Fantasy Tactics or I would say
any of the Game Boy Fire Emblems,
Shining Forces, or or the Game Boy Fire Emblems. Like, it's very, you know, grid based strategy RPG with lots of like dialogue and music that sounds like it feels like I picked up a Game Boy game, like, right off the bat. Controls are pretty smooth, a lot of drag and drop kind of controls, where you'll take a character, you'll drag them to the square you want them to go to, or if their attack is ready, they'll do that one. It kind of preloads specials, it seems like, so there's not a lot of move variants that I've seen yet, although I would assume things open up as you play further into the game. But it seemed like it kind of auto-loaded the best attack for whatever you did when you drag a character to make that attack. Turn-based, it was pretty straightforward. I will once again be upset because it is internet required, from what I can tell, because I was on the subway playing it and it just shut down in the middle of me traveling because it couldn't connect to the internet. So yeah,
they're concerned about
that's a bummer.
Piracy, I guess.
Come on. Like, it's like there's part of me that's like, you're on iOS. Like, there's borderline zero piracy on iOS and even on Android to an extent. But it's a little frustrating to deal with that. But otherwise, it's like it's right in my kind of wheelhouse of Shining Force Fire Emblem games. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy they put it out, and the controls are really smooth, and it looks great on the phone itself. But yeah, the in-app purchase, I had heard they were doing that, but there was no real hint of that at the beginning of the game. So what do you got there?
Well, my understanding of it is that there are, you know, there's like a premium currency, like gems, and so like you said, it is timer based, so you can only do, I guess, so much at a time as far as how many events you can participate at once in a single sitting. And so I believe those gems will allow you to replenish that energy so that you can continue to play. Or if your team falls, like if you team wipe in the middle of a battle, you can spend a certain amount of gems to revive your entire team and continue the battle where you left off. So, and I also believe that you use the gems to recruit new characters to your team. So it would almost seem like the best use of the gems would be to recruit characters, because everything else is sort of a... like a helping function, I suppose, right?
Yeah, the story kind of followed so far, from what I could grasp from the story. It you have sort of this specialized weapon that can summon new heroes to your team, and I guess that's where the gems would get spent.
Mm-hmm. But it's, I mean, from
you summon a couple at the beginning for the tutorial, but
from what I saw, I mean, from, you know, some of the previews that I saw ahead of time, it seemed pretty reasonable, like the, you know, your ability to acquire the gems, and so
yeah,
I don't know, it kind of sounds like, you know, like a lot of games in this model, I think it's really up to you, like your, you know, how you decide to.
I'm like a two dots disciple, you know, like I play that game endlessly on the phone, and it has in-app purchases, and they're there for you if you feel like kind of easy moding it, I guess is the way to put it. And they're, if you don't and you want to wait, then you just wait, you know, like they'll recharge, things will go on. Like it's not as, I think in-app purchases become more devious when it's like, and you got this far and now you have to buy things if you ever want to play this game again, you know, like that's the kind of thing that that bums me out.
Yeah. From what I saw, this is really just for more of like a convenience thing, you know, or if you you know, to me, from what I saw, it seems like your best use of them would be to save them so that you could recruit more characters, which seems to be the whole, you know, kind of allure of a game like this, is that you want to kind of build your team. And from what I saw, it looks like all the different characters come from all the different, you know, Fire Emblem games. So
yeah, it appeared to.
Yeah. For longtime fans of the series, I think that's probably where your effort's going to be best spent, is just kind of like getting those characters that you like the most from other games and adding them to your team.
I was like, I was like immediately transferred back to, you know, playing on my original DS or whatever, playing the Fire Emblem on that. Like it definitely feels authentic. It doesn't feel like a game. It doesn't feel like a game with Fire Emblem slapped on it and then hammered onto the mobile phone, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like it didn't feel like, you know, there's one that just came out that's like Pokemon related that felt like they were just like, put Pokemon on a gem game or something, mm-hmm. you know, and just mm-hmm. throw it out there. So it feels like a legit Fire Emblem title. It feels very Nintendo-y. It feels very JRPG-ish or strategy JRPG-ish. And yeah, so like if that's in your wheelhouse, you're going to love it.
Probably. Yeah, I guess we'll see how we feel in a week. You know, we'll probably play
it. I will warn, there was like a half a gig of downloads to get the game started.
Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, like, the first thing I saw was like, we need to download some data. And then it's like, okay, now you're ready to watch the opening movie. And
yeah, that it was like, we need to download some data, and it downloaded like an 80 meg movie. And then you watch a movie and you listen to all this music. And then like you get through that part and it's like, we need to download some more data. And it was like 320 megs.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not ready for that yet. So that's how far I've gotten in the game. So there you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. The next bit of news. This I kind of just put this in here for Ash. But it looks like Blizzard banned more than 20,000 South Korean Overwatch players for cheating.
They were cheating bad. They were doing something called nuking. Did you read about this?
No. Tell me about it.
Nuking's actually where they find a way to attack your personal IP address and hit you with such bad ping that you lose a match. So they were actually going in like ranked matches and finding out, you know, information about their teammates and like nuking their IPs and basically just spamming them with information and making them lose these ranked matches so they could rank up faster.
Wow. That's gross.
And apparently a lot of people were doing it in South Korea. So it became sort of a thing, and a lot of people were complaining, you know, in ranked that they couldn't get anywhere because they just kept getting nuked. And it just sort of became this whole phenomenon that was happening. Apparently it was very easy to do. And, looks like, you know, 20,000 plus people were actually doing it, which is insane.
I mean, that's good on them, because now there's only 25 million minus 20,000 people to find online
Isn't
to play
that
with.
Insane? Yeah, they just released that the numbers for Overwatch are 25 million now, which that's is crazy. Just bonkers.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I guess the thing that made it worse with the cheating is that a lot of the South Korean players will play in internet cafes where after their session is complete, the machine will just wipe itself and kind of start anew. So it was
no way to know.
Yeah, it was really hard to track. You know, when those when the players would install like the, you know, the cheating software, they would end their session and the machine would just reboot, you know, brand new to a restore point, and then all that, you know, evidence would be gone functionally. So,
I have sort of a related question, Ash. I wanted to see if you noticed something in Overwatch. Have you noticed more and more players doing the tactic where they will take as long as they possibly can on every single turn to see if they can wait you out from quitting the game?
Hearthstone?
Did I say not Hearthstone?
Yeah, you said Overwatch, but yeah, Hearthstone, yes. I've noticed a lot of people doing that lately.
Yeah.
And especially when they start to lose, they'll just be like, you know what? I'm losing. I'm just going to sit and like walk away from my computer. And you're like, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. Like and
you're just doing this to like try make me quit out. And
because if they don't actively do it, like if you literally walked away from your computer, then you know, Hearthstone does a smart thing where it'll like it gives you one turn's chance essentially, and if it thinks you're AFK, it'll just start every turn that comes up to you. It immediately kicks into the like here's your warning essentially that you're running out of time. But if you do anything, like if you make one single move between when that like burn down starts and ends, it kicks it out of that mode and you're no longer in that mode. So it's like what I've noticed happening a lot. And I sometimes will kick on a game like late at night, like before I go to bed, I'm like, oh, I'll play a game of Hearthstone. And I'll see it, like I'll hit a player that does that. And at late at night, I honestly just give up. I just give them the win. Cause I'm like, I'm not even gonna mess with this, but I've noticed it more and more and more and more. And I'm like, what is going on?
It's
like,
just kind of a dick move. You know,
yeah.
It's just kind of I absolutely hate when that happens. But like I said, it normally happens when they're losing anyway. So, you know.
Yeah.
But don't cheat in video games. It's bad. Last bit of news is sort of breaking, but I didn't actually remember this was happening. But next year, there's going to be a Marvel's Runaways series on Hulu.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with Runaways, it actually has a really cool premise. Joss Whedon did a run on it for a while, and actually it was pretty damn solid when he did it as well. But I want to say it was originally Brian K. Vaughan's series, and it's about a group of six kids that are the children of supervillains, and they don't know that they're the children of supervillains, and they all kind of find out together. So they're all teenagers, and then once they find out that their parents are supervillains, they decide that they are going to kind of set off on their own and kind of become their own people and live outside of the shadow of their parents. And of course, some of them have powers and abilities. Other ones don't. But it's all about them kind of discovering who they are and what's going on. And it looks like it's about to, kick off production. They actually have the whole cast, which is available. I have never heard of any of these people. So they're all like, all 15, 16 years old, young actors. I think most of them are new actors. But the cast is assembled. They all kind of look like their comic book counterparts. And it looks like they're going to try and adhere to the story of the Runaways pretty closely. So I'm pretty excited.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Have you read Runaways yet, Matt?
I read like when it first premiered, I read like a couple of issues, but
I read the first, I did the Marvel app where you basically can download however many you want. And I think I read the first 25 issues of it, and it was actually really, really good. It does like the teen angsty thing very well, but, them kind of discovering their abilities and the drama between the different characters was pretty fantastic. And also, once they actually start getting into super fights and stuff like that, it's neat to see kind of an up and coming team of like, young people learning how to fight and all that, which was good. So I'm looking forward to the Runaways Hulu series. It's going to be, again, a crazy time. We're going to have like 10, maybe 15 superhero shows on the air next year. So it's crazy.
When do we hit like zombie levels of overdone though? Like when do we decide like, okay, like what are ones are we going to actually watch here? So there's Legion. Legion starts this week as well, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So there's Powerless, Legion, Runaways, S.H.I.E.L.D., all of the Marvel, Inhumans. Hell's Kitchen ones, Inhumans. Yeah. That's a lot.
It's a lot. There's a lot. But I'll watch them all. So we're back with our reviews. We're going to start off with Riverdale, which is on the CW on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, I want to say, or maybe 10 p.m. Eastern, right around there. And I'll start off by saying I actually really ended up liking this show. This is it's a Greg Berlanti produced teen drama starring the characters from Archie, but it's not really an Archie TV show. It's like if Archie got possessed by like the cast of Heathers mixed with Twin Peaks mixed with the game Life is Strange, which doesn't make any sense, I know, but it's this weird like Pacific Northwest set murder mystery starring the characters from Archie, which sounds just bizarre, but the show is super stylized. I think it's actually very well shot. It's visually gorgeous. The music was great. The tone was great. I was actually, like, in terms of the acting and such, I thought the acting was great for a bunch of actors I had never heard of. And I actually was very intrigued about what was going to happen next. It has this very ethereal kind of dreamlike vibe to it, which I can't say that I've seen too many shows in recent years that kind of left me with that same kind of, it was spooky, which I just thought was so bizarre for an Archie TV show, and it kind of felt like, I watched it twice. I watched it once by myself and once with my wife. And when she finished watching it, she's like, so this show, she's like, is it set in like the 50s? And I'm like, no, like they all just kind of, it's very kind of otherworldly. Like it doesn't really make much sense. Like some of the characters dress like maybe they're from the 1950s, almost, similar to what Twin Peaks did. Like you showed up in Twin Peaks and there's people like, with slick back hair and like leather jackets. And you're like, wait, are we in 1950 or are we in 1989, 1990? So
sounds really appealing.
It was actually, honestly, I'm not just saying, it was really cool and really different. And there was something, I think, special to the vibe of the show. The second episode airs, I think, it's airing right now. So I'll let you guys know next week what I thought of the second show. But in terms of a pilot, which is generally usually the worst episode of a show is the pilot. I like the pilot quite a lot for Riverdale. The characters are similar to, but I wouldn't say exact carbon copies of the old Archie books. You get to see characters like, you know, Josie and the Pussycats and Archie and Jughead and all those characters kind of reimagined in a modern kind of dreamlike world. And I thought it was pretty cool. Anyone else check it out other than me?
I haven't yet. No, I heard really good things. This is sort of like a new initiative of theirs because they did Archie, the comic. They've done two refreshes on the comic recently that are like more adult tinged and have like a different take on it. Like, less of the kind of gee whiz Archie from the 50s and 60s, but I think it's cool. It looks stylized as hell. It looks really awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool, and it's definitely adult. Like, I mean, there's like people having sex with teachers and people getting shot, and like it's totally like fucked up. Like, so it's like not Archie. Like, you remember Archie? So I'm on board, and I'm curious to see where it goes. A couple of our listeners / internet pals were like, oh, there's just too much drama. It's just filled with drama. And it is. It's very, like, it's super dramatic. Like, the characters are all,
is it like, you know, is it like Scream Queens by any chance?
There are characters that are like, Scream Queens is like a level 10 on, like, on the Heathers, you know. It's just like very, very, very just super sarcastic and silly. This is, I think, like probably level 7, so it's not quite there, but it definitely tonally, I would say, similar to Scream Queens.
Okay, that's cool. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I think you'll like it. But let's shift on over to The Expanse, which is nothing like Riverdale.
Hey-o. The Expanse is back, guys.
That's an awesome
book I'm reading. Season 2 is here. I'm filled full of Expanse goodness. So Season 2, if you watched Season 1, Season 2 kicks off. Not literally the moment Season 1 ends, but very shortly thereafter. Kind of picking up where I feel like I should not spoil Season 1, probably picking up at the end with Holden and his crew on their spaceship out in space on the mission that they're currently on, and then following Avra Sala, who ends up in a sticky situation right at the beginning of Episode 1. Honestly, the tone of the show is dead on. It seems like Season 2 is going to be a much faster paced kind of like, okay, you already get the world. Now we're just going to move forward with all the goings on, essentially, or goings on. Which I think is great, because I think the one fault I would probably give Season 1 is that it did feel like they were maybe over explaining or kind of hand holding a lot more to get everybody into the world and kind of understand what's going on around it. You know, there's just so many players and so much stuff kind of happening simultaneously that it's interesting to see. Season 2 right away introduces the character of Bobby Draper, who is a much loved character in the second book of the series. She's awesome. She's a total badass. I think she's Australian by her accent, I would say. But she is killer and is already great within an episode of the first season. I mean, of the second season. So, you get introduced to her. Avra Sala cusses immediately. She says the F word right away, which is pretty great, because that is what she is known for in the books. As well as being like, just the ultimate political mover, and that kind of, you see that happening more in this opening episode as well. The only other thing I will say is that, weirdly, and you know, we don't get political on this show very often, but weirdly, this book that was written, God, it had to be 6 years ago now, is like wildly valid in our current political climate.
Oh, sure.
And mirrors like some of the just absolute craziness that's going on right now. And to have a show that can be of that moment
for
and
craziness
be,
what do you mean, man? Everything's fine, everything's great.
To have a show that can be of great be in this moment and kind of be of the caliber that The Expanse can be, I think could be cathartic and kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Like I would highly recommend watching it almost just for that, because it's it's just so, we have talked about this when reviewing the books and talking about how sci-fi at its best is kind of a mirror on the society that we live in,
mm-hmm.
and kind of shows the faults of what's going on around us. And the Expanse books were always sort of about the tension of immigrants and the tension of terrorism and, you know, how that plays politically and what that means for people that are like barely involved and in that kind of scenario. And to have that then turn into a TV show of decent caliber and then be in the political climate we're in, I think is, I mean, weirdly good for the show while terrible for us, but also kind of interesting to get that viewpoint from what is otherwise a fiction. So season's kicking off great. It looks good. They still have the same budget, seemingly. There's still some moments where you're like, oh yeah, it's sci-fi, because there's like, I think it happened probably in Battlestar too, which is like every once in a while the spaceships, you're like,
yeah, okay. Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. Ran a little short on the CG budget this week, you know.
Yeah.
But otherwise, armor all looks pretty good. They went for, I don't know how you guys, or I guess Scott, you read it, how you pictured the Martian power armor in your head.
I imagined it as being like huge, like almost like a football, you know, football gear.
So I imagined it probably even bigger. I kind of gave it sort of that Warhammer space.
Oh, okay.
40K or whatever idea, like just like like mini tanks essentially that these people are walking around in. And for, I would say probably what are obvious reasons they did not do that. It's more like Halo style armor. It's like Master Chief kind of.
Okay, that's fair.
It still looks really good, but I'm sure that they were like, oh, these people have to be able to move around in this, and we do not have the budget to make, you know, 30 Warhammer style power armor.
I just remember there were points in the book where, you know, she'd be like, I just need to get to my suit. And then I thought like, well, the suit must be really important.
Like in my head, it was like a mini little mech, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm on the same, page.
It's not quite that. Her suit is actually kind of how I pictured the Martian, like, soldier getup to be. And then they kind of scaled that down. So I think everything scaled back a little, probably for budgetary reasons, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But it looks great. Script was great. Like, the episode moves real fast. So if you are already excited about The Expanse, then yay for you. And, if you, for some reason, never watched season one or read any of the books and you are somehow listening to this podcast, then I would recommend that for the 4,000th time of me saying it, these books are absolutely fabulous and some of the best near future sci-fi that's been put out in a while. And the show is great. They're doing a knockout job with the show. So,
yeah.
So go catch it. It's back on now. And the first two episodes, I think, are available already. And then, episode 3 kicks off next week, so
that's awesome. Nice. That's cool.
Yeah,
really like that show. I've seen it been described as the best show on TV that nobody's watching.
That makes me sad. I really hope that's not true.
Yeah.
I mean it is a very, very good show, but like, man, I hope it's getting at least sci-fi good numbers, you know, like I hope it's one of their better rated shows.
It probably just has something to do with like the sci-fi audience more than likely moving away from cable towards like Netflix and other streaming outlets. So it's like that show becomes difficult for some people like myself to watch unless you buy a season on Amazon or whatever, which I mean, I would totally be willing to do once I have the time to watch it. So
yeah, it's sad also though. I think shows tend to, no matter what channel they're on or what audience they're meant for, it's like everything has to compete with Walking Dead and Game of Thrones for like unknown reasons.
Which is too bad.
Because those shows are just like behemoths. Like there's no fight. Walking Dead gets like, it's like 30 million viewers or something insane. And then, you know, Game of Thrones peaks at like 18 million. The numbers are just giant for any cable company to compete with. So hopefully they're not being put on that scale and they will continue to make the episodes. I thought they already greenlit season 3, but I might be wrong, so I'd have to check.
Cool.
But it's great. Definitely still recommended. They're not seemingly at this point making any missteps. They're just doing a good job of keeping the story moving.
Nice. And it's always interesting when science fiction gets something right or hits very close to home, you know what I mean?
Kind of wish they didn't though, you know.
Yeah. It's like, well, you know, at this point like Idiocracy is 10 years old. The sequel to that movie, WALL-E, came out 2 years later. And I just kind of feel like if all of a sudden we start seeing gourmet Taco Bells, then we'll know that we've We've what have we done? We've crossed the Rubicon, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
Anyways, the next thing I wanted to talk about was a indie game that I played called Toby the Secret Mine. I got a review code to play the game, and it is on, let's see, I think it's on every platform at this point, and I think on Xbox it's $10. But the thing that would stand out immediately to most people is that it is visually similar to games like Limbo or Badlands, in which, you know, the characters are...
Is it a platformer, Scott?
It is a platformer. It's not necessarily whimsical, but...
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah, Ash is going to go get some water or something. Yeah, I mean, it just so happens that a lot of these indie games do happen to be platformers. I don't know how that shakes out that way.
I think it's probably small development teams have an easier time building a platformer.
Yeah.
Like, conceptually, it takes less resources to build something of that scale versus, like, you know, some of these bigger kind of...
Yeah, I think there are, like, games. There are, like, three core genres of like, Xbox indie games right now, and I would say that those are platformers, which include, you know, whimsical and puzzle platformers. Right. There are what I would call, like, walking simulators, and again, I've said this many times, I don't mean that despairing, you know, as a disparaging comment, that's just what they are. Right. And like point and click, old school point and click adventure style games, yeah, which are kind of like a cousin of that. But
yeah, I mean, I think that's like old school or throwback games and platformers have the same probably development appeal, which mm-hmm. is that you have less to worry about while you're building it. I guess there's still, you can still craft an amazing story and an amazing experience and a great game, and you know, each one can be unique, but I think it's, you know, it's the equivalent of like just building for the team you have and not the one that
absolutely
hope you have $100 million later.
Yeah, and with a platformer, you could, like, you know, draw the levels on paper and then go and make them. It's very, like, it's tangible. You can do it with limited resources. But anyways, Toby the Secret Mine is, I think, was released to Xbox maybe a week or two ago at this point. Again, it is similar to, you know, visually similar to games like Limbo and Badlands, but I would say that while that comparison is probably the prevailing one that you'll see on a lot of, you know, reviews of this game, I would say that the game's gameplay is different from Limbo in the sense that the core gameplay mechanics of, you know, moving a character, jumping, interacting with objects, those are the same, but the types of challenges that you need to overcome are different. So I think in Limbo, some of the platforming challenges were, you know, slow to unfold and required you to really kind of visually process different parts of the environment in order to figure out, like, what you could jump on and what you were supposed to move in order to get things to happen. I think in this game, the challenge of figuring out what to do is a little more obvious, and it's really more, I think, more of an emphasis is put on, you know, your, I guess, your dexterity and being able to actually execute what you need to do. So in Limbo, once you figured out what to do, it was pretty easy to do it. But in this game, it's easier to figure out what to do and a little bit harder to actually do it. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So I mean, here, maybe a different way to explain would be, like, let's say you are a big fan of the Black Keys, right? And you're like, cool, there's like two guys, one guy plays guitar and the other one's playing drums. And then you see another band where it's like the same setup, and it's like, okay, there's someone playing guitar and someone playing drums, but then all of a sudden it sounds like White Stripes, and you're like, well, that's not what I was expecting, but I still like this band too. You know, it's kind of, that's the difference, right? Is that you'll be drawn to this game because of what you see, but the game is different, and that's okay. So,
okay.
Yeah. That's kind of,
I get it.
Yeah. The best way to describe it. And these levels are more self-contained.
How would you describe, like, the number one, like, chief mechanic of the game? Like, is it like move the thing to the thing, jump on top of the thing, mm-hmm. swing from the thing?
Yep.
And you play as what kind of creature are you?
I mean, my best estimation is that it's like a shadowy, you know, maybe like a dog like creature, like a two legged, maybe like an ugly doll almost, like if it were a shadow.
Okay.
And so, like, in that sense, it's like you'll look at it and go, like, oh, you know, you'll think of Badlands, you'll think of Limbo because the characters are shadows and the backgrounds are painted, right? That's the difference. So, but, you know, the levels are relatively self-contained. You can get through them. They're not very long. Like, I think I was able to get through most of the game in, like, 2 to 3 hours. But that being said, it's a $10 game, and I thought that the price point was right for, like, the amount of challenge of the game and, you know, the amount of time that you would spend in the game. So I would recommend this game, obviously, probably more for fans of, you know, these types of indie platforming games. But I do think it's a quality entry in this field and one that's worth worth a look. So that's Toby the Secret Mind. I think it's available everywhere, you know, Steam. I think it's even on mobile devices at this point. So it's definitely worth a look.
Cool.
Recommended.
Recommended. Mm-hmm. I snuck off to the movies the other night and went to see Resident Evil, the Final Chapter, because I've seen all of these in the theater, which I don't know if is a good thing or not.
That's amazing. Well, hey, I saw Assassin's Creed, so what are you going to do?
There you go. Yeah. So yeah, for our listeners who have been listening for a long time, I am a big Resident Evil fan, although I have not played 6 or 7, kind of a more of a classic Resident Evil fan. So 1, 2, 3, Resident Evil 4. I like the original cast of characters and all that stuff. It kind of gives me the, you know, the 90s video game.
You liked them before they were huge.
Yeah, I liked them before things got a little too serious. But Resident Evil, the Final Chapter is apparently the final chapter. It's the 6th film starring Mila Jovovich as Alice. And this one does some cool stuff and some really bad stuff. And I'll just talk about it all without spoiling too much stuff. The good thing is that she goes back to Raccoon City, which, of course, in the very first film, if you've ever seen the first Resident Evil film, she goes underneath the mansion into the Hive, which is an umbrella facility where they're doing, you know, creating bioweapons. And she goes in with this commando team, and it's actually a fun little adventure film with some zombies thrown in, and it wasn't terrible. And it actually had a pretty cool soundtrack, which I still like to this day. The neat thing that they do in Resident Evil Final Chapter is they bring Alice back to the Hive. So for one reason that I don't want to reveal, she has to go all the way from DC, where the movie starts, to, I guess, it's supposed to be Colorado, I want to say. And she has to go back down into the Hive underneath Raccoon City, which was blown up by an atomic bomb. So she has to kind of go into this irradiated wasteland of a city, and then she has to go underneath back into the Hive to do something. There are some major like missteps in the final chapter. One thing they do that's pretty bad is they introduce a whole new crew of characters. They had like in all these movies, they had like a lot of the classic characters from the games kind of littered throughout the film. So they had Leon and they had Jill Valentine and they had Barry Burton and they had, you know, Ada Wong and all the characters from the games. They existed in the films, just kind of scattered throughout the film franchise. The only person they bring back for this is Claire Redfield. Played by Allie Larder, if you guys remember her from Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So she's back for the final film, and everyone else is new. So everyone else kind of becomes a bit of a red shirt. They kind of tell you like their name, like this guy's Doc, and like they'll give Doc like one line throughout the whole movie, and then like Doc will die in a horrible way, and you're like, I didn't know anything about Doc, nor did I care about him, and that happens literally for the entire cast of the movie. Mm-hmm. You don't get to know them. They're not really written. They just die in like mysterious, weird ways. And some of the action set pieces were pretty cool. Near the beginning of the film, she kind of does this cool bullfight with this flying pterodactyl type creature, which actually was a pretty cool set piece. But one thing I noticed, I'm kind of like, I mean, everyone on the earth is over this, but I'm really over like dark, shaky cam footage of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I loathe it. And when I see it in films, like my brain turns off. So like if a movie utilizes like shaky cam action sequences and like all too often, and especially if it's like really dark and you can't tell what's going on, I'm like, oh, I don't want to call it lazy, but they just didn't shoot this well. And, you know, had to kind of like, you know, simulate movement and, kind of frenetic action when there wasn't really that much going on. So there's a whole lot of that in the movie to the point where like by the end of it, I was just exhausted by it.
That's too bad. There are so many better ways to handle that. I mean, even, you know, you look at some of the fight scenes you see in the Marvel Netflix shows, which are spectacular. And
right. Just like let the choreography do its thing and show people, you know, the physicality of that action. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And actually having, I mean, the Daredevil fight scene in the hallway is a perfect example where they have one continuous camera shot and they just let the stunt people, you know, do their thing. And it blew everyone's mind because we're so used to, you know, the camera jumping around 50 times, which is what happens in Resident Evil, the final chapter.
Yeah. And if you want to throw something else out there, you know what they did in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the TV show? They would just have the little foot soldiers dance around in the background and do nothing. Do you remember that? Like, so
I don't remember that.
So like that was always the trick of that show, is that when the Power Rangers were fighting the bad guys, they would have like the you know, the guys with no name tags, the bad guys, like in the gray suits. Those guys would just kind of like dance around. Yeah, they would dance around in the background just to make it look like something was happening, even though they weren't actually fighting anybody. They were just kind of like, you know, gesturing like you would see in like old school fighting games, like those people in the crowds that were doing nothing.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like,
that's
so really just cool. just do something, like, but don't leave us in the dark and don't make it so close up that you can't even like figure out what the combat is. Like, that's so annoying.
Right.
I'm right there with you. Yeah.
So, you know, there were a lot of qualms. Some of the things that, if you're a fan of the franchise, and I know like there are people that have seen all six of these like me, they do answer some questions about the Alice character. Finally, after six films, you figure out who she is, what her background story is. You get to hear like the whole history of Umbrella. So they tell you everything by the end of this. So you have all the answers if you were like still, you know, after I don't even know how long at this point, 15 years, I think, still looking for answers or still give a shit after 15 years. but they answer a lot of questions and, you know, and it's interesting. I don't think we'll ever get a proper Resident Evil movie, you know, with characters from the original franchise at this point, since they have now rebooted it with Resident Evil 7, especially. But it's, you know, if you, like I said, if you're a fan and you're looking for something to do, I say go check it out. It is by no means a good film. There are some really terrible parts to it and some really questionable things that happen. You're just like, why in the world? There's some bad green screen. There's some shitty looking monsters. So I don't know. I would say go to it only if you're a Resident Evil fan.
Wow. Well, I mean,
but that's going.
Yeah.
I mean, at least there's an end to it, right? I feel like sometimes series will start and then get canceled halfway through or just never happen. Happens a lot in TV, not so often in movies, but you know, it's probably nice just to know that there's an end. You know, and you can say like, okay, these seven films or whatever.
It has an ending. And I would say in terms of endings, it's relatively satisfying. Like, you get answers and things happen. So
yeah, that's cool.
Let's talk about For Honor.
Yeah. So, okay. Maybe we should probably, just to be fair to the game, like, we're going to talk about the beta, right? So in the beta, you know, things can happen. It's not complete. It's not representative final gameplay, blah, blah, blah. So let's talk about what was in the game. And then we'll maybe just talk about sort of our feelings on what we were able to play. So
I think you're kind of prefacing it thinking that Matt and I are going to tear the game a new butthole, but
I'll
only give constructive criticism because we didn't message you and we're like, what is going on?
No. I was honestly just saying that to be fair to the game, because that's what it was. It's not a, you know, we're not reviewing the full game. You know, we can only talk about what we were able to experience in the beta. So that's just to be kind of like accurate in what we're talking about. Anyway, so what we were able to play in this For Honor beta was just primarily some of the online PvP and PvE components. So there were, you know, as many of you have probably seen, there are three main factions to the game. So there's the Knights, the Vikings, and Samurai. You could play as one of three characters from each of the three factions. So there's nine characters total. There were three game modes that were available in the beta. So it was 1v1, 2v2, and then another game mode called Dominion, in which you play with a team of three other people against another team of four, and you try to control three different points on the map. Interesting thing about this game mode, which may be different from other types of, you know, region control game modes, is that there's actually kind of these like grunts that fight in the middle of the battlefield at objective B. So there's like little minions that are kind of battling in the middle of the battlefield, and they don't really hurt you too much or really get in your way, but they kind of just add some confusion to the battlefield. And if you're not paying attention, they can kill you, but it's just kind of an interesting twist on the you know, capture the control point formula. So I don't know, do you want to go first and talk about like who you played as and what you did, and we'll maybe kind of go around the table and then talk about our feelings about what we saw.
I played as the Knight faction, so I tried the sort of the medium character, so the average character, I forget what it was called.
Did you play as the assassin?
I did not play as the assassin because I knew you were playing as that character. So I played as the heavy and the medium of the knight class.
You mean like as far as the attack goes, you played as the main knight character? Like the,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the one with the flail I played with as well. So I played both of those, I think, for a couple hours each. And there's some things, I'll start talking about the things that I liked. I played only Dominion. I didn't do the 1v1 or the 2v2, so I only played the Dominion mode. I did like the level of customization. I'm a big fan of that in games, and there's a lot to unlock and equip your character with. So as you win matches, you accrue, I guess, what is it, gold, probably?
Yeah, let's just call it gold for now.
Yeah, it's like you can get money.
Yep.
And then you can use that to buy visual upgrades for your character. And some of them, I think, do have actual stats.
Yeah, they're not, so just, you can, not just visual. Yeah. Some of them, it can be like an armor piece or a...
Right, yeah, I got like a hilt that boosted my sword damage and stuff like that. So you can actually get some goodies that make you more powerful, which is neat, and you can kind of tweak out how your character looks. You can also, create your own coat of arms and display that on your character and change your character's colors, and you really get in there and tweak stuff out. I feel like there was a lot of depth to that, which is neat. The combat, which is the game, like, the whole game is the combat, so really there is no other aspect to really talk about other than it's all combat. So I found the combat to be, for me personally, a little bit lacking. I feel like they were going for a lot of depth with their blocking mechanic, but I feel like in a lot of scenarios, maybe it was because I was bad at it, but I felt like the way the game is currently being played, I felt like blocking didn't work all that well.
I don't think people really block, especially in Dominion, people don't block. It's really just like kind of like a button mash.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I discovered as well. It just kind of became like a spammy sort of thing. So you'd get to a control point. God forbid you got there and there's two people there. And if that ever happened, it doesn't matter really how great you are. Like, you may be able to take one out, but then the other one's going to take you out. Or God forbid one gets behind you and you can't block behind you, so you're dead. So I would imagine in a perfect world where you're communicating with your friends and you're coordinating, you know, you might be able to like fight back to back, or, you know, figure out a plan of attack together. But in, in the world that I live in, where I often play with random people, that just wasn't happening. Like, I would go to a control point, I would fight, two guys would show up, I would just get annihilated. And it just happened over and over again. And I had a couple matches where it was really fun when things worked out. Like, if I showed up and one other person showed up, we had a really cool duel. We were actually like parrying and dodging and things of that nature. But most of the time, what I would discover is that I would wound somebody and then they would just turn around and haul ass like away, like far away on the map till they got to their friends. And that, you know, I can assume that as you unlock different character abilities, there's going to be like a hamstring type ability to slow them or stun them. But for me, starting out, it was like I couldn't catch them, I couldn't stun them. It was just, to me, very, very frustrating, and like it sucked all the fun out of it for me. Like, I would get to a point, I would fight for a second, and I would just get gutted by a couple people that showed up, you know, over and over again. So I don't know, I kind of feel like they were going for a high risk kind of combat system, similar to something like Bloodborne or Dark Souls. But I don't feel like they exactly executed on it. And I don't know why that is, but I don't know, Matt, what did you think?
I played less than both of you probably, but it was, I mean, the positives are it looks gorgeous and the actual combat itself to me was relatively smooth. It just felt very weighty and very slow. So it was like a lot of times you're kind of, if you do try to block, you're just kind of standing there while people are mashing buttons. And it's like near impossible to really pull off well. It's easy. They present it as an easy thing in
training,
like, versus the training in the computer. You can kind of just like marauder those guys. But the moment you're out of that, it just wasn't. It wasn't the same feeling, and it was disappointing. I too played as the knight system, or the knight like vanguard character, which is the middle one, I think, right?
The tank,
yeah,
or the
it was just kind of okay. And I'll be, to be dead honest, I think where I really tuned out was during this sounds worse than it is, but during their like explanation video of like the systems that would run in the game, I like watched that and immediately knew this was not a thing I was gonna like keep up on or understand what was going on. There's like so much moving, there's so much like math going on behind the scenes that has almost nothing to do with you, it seems like, at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That I just was like, all right, I don't know what I'm tuning into here. So it was like a really weird blend. Like I think Ash is right that the kind of going for, I hadn't thought about it till he actually told me that on Slack, going for that sort of Dead Souls or Dead Souls?
Dark yeah. Souls?
Dark Souls or Bloodborne kind of weighty combat or like fraught combat.
I've also seen people throw around the idea of Bushido Blade as like a game that's focused on melee combat.
Yeah, but Bushido Blade...
But you could attack like body parts in Bushido Blade. It's a different
game. It was like a different thing. And then it's like a weird mix of that and that Dynasty Warriors. Like it's like an odd combination. And then I didn't have a lot of buy-in on it. So like I would like if it was a game that you saw and thought you were sounds like an awesome game to you, you'd probably enjoy it. It just the combat needs some tweaking for sure. And if you understand the systems for me was just like, there's no way I'm going to dedicate the amount of brain power I would have to like understand what was going on to understand it. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, did you have a different, it seemed like you were maybe a little more positive than Ash or I were on the game, but
yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things I can talk about. I do agree with you in the sense that like there are some metagame components to this game, which immediately to me made it feel like this game was built for esports and streaming, which like to me doesn't like that doesn't do anything for me, which is too bad. And I think that not only does that make things like the metagame confusing you know when you first encounter it, but it also I think kind of reduces the quality of the Dominion maps. Because if you look at the Dominion maps, the way that they're set up is that there's always a control point that's close to your team. There's one that's close to the other team, and then there's one that's always directly in the middle of the map that you can just charge right into, and that's where all of the minions are battling. And so what I remember about some of these early E3 videos is that they made it look like, you know, to their credit, Dynasty Warriors maps like had many different zones to them, you know.
Yes.
And there were characters fighting, like NPCs were fighting everywhere around the map, and they would kind of like as you beat back, you know, the enemy, like they would fall back or they would push ahead, you know. And so like kind of there would be like this tide that would be turning throughout the entire map as you fought in Dynasty Warriors, right?
Yeah.
And the only place that you seem to see this in Dominion is just in that one control point in the middle of the map. So from that perspective, the you know, the multiplayer Dominion map is built for competition. And so there's not a lot of like variety even between the three maps that were available in the beta. They were all basically set up in a similar way. Let's see. The other thing about what that accomplishes on those maps too is that you can get into a situation where you and the other team are just basically doing circles around the exterior of the map. So like your team will capture A, run in a circle outside the map to capture C, but then meanwhile the other team has run the other way to capture A while you're capturing C, you know, so you're just trading objectives, right?
And right,
so you can get into a situation where that happens. So that's too bad too. As far as the combat goes, I agree as far as the Dominion piece goes is that they were trying to create something with the combat overall in which like it was very tactical and kind of like well executed. I think you do see a lot of people just running in and spamming the button because, you know, that's what works in a lot of other games. I think what they tried to do to kind of like deal with some of that is introduce this idea of a stamina meter. So, I mean, if you do go there, go in guns a-blazing and it doesn't like all of your hits don't land, for example, you will be in a situation in which you can no longer block. So at that point, if your opponent's stamina were to drain out, that would be your chance to counterattack and really kind of like take them out. What I found too often though, because I started out playing as the assassin character, because what drew me to that was the sort of tactical nature of that character. Cause they, in the tutorial, they were like, hey, you're the assassin. It's your, you know, instead of like you being the first one to attack, you would like parry and counterattack the enemy. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I can do that. But what I found is that character was so weak is that when I would be attacked by, you know, the medium build characters like the knight or the Viking, just a couple of strikes would kill me. So in three hits, I'd be dead and I'd be waiting to respawn. So I didn't really see the allure of some of the more like finesse characters. And then eventually I did switch to the medium knight and then the medium Viking as well. And I found that it was much easier to, you know, dispatch enemies like just using their basic attacks. Yeah. That being said, you know, the medium knight and the medium Viking were like distinctly different in their combat, which I thought was really cool. So it's like, it's not just that each character, you know, of similar class is like a palette swap, you know, or like a character swap or whatever.
Right.
They do behave differently. They fight differently. Viking that I played as, for example, has the ability to charge and grab somebody almost like in a wrestling move. The thing that I think some people do and some people don't, and this, I feel like this is kind of controversial, is that there are places in the map where you can knock people off the edge, resulting in like an instant kill, which if you think about it is like, well, the whole point of the game was to kind of like do this chess match with the other player. But now you've introduced this ability in which like I could charge at somebody. And if I grab them the right way, I can just push them right off the ledge and they're already out of the game. You know,
I noticed people, kind of abusing ladders too, because you can jump down a ladder and knock somebody off of it.
Yeah, and knocking somebody off the ladder was an instant kill.
Yeah, and it happened to me like 5 times. Like, oh, people are just waiting at the top of the ladder because it means you don't have to play that game. You can just hit a single button and get it insta kill.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I feel like that's a huge problem, and I'd be really surprised if they didn't just change that to like a damage, as opposed to like an instant death for your character.
Right.
So, you know, like I think the reason why I was so hyped on this game is that I really like, you know, I really do like what they want the game to be. Like, I like this idea of, you know, getting into more nuanced chess match style melee combat with both computer and like actual opponents. Because it, at that point, it's not just like a, you know, like a button mashing fest, but until you can, right, at least, you know, get people to fight the right way, or until you can penalize them heavily enough for doing it, I think you'll just continue to see people fighting that way.
Well, you do have to hand it to Ubisoft. They are really trying to innovate with multiplayer. If you look at Watch Dogs and you look at Assassin's Creed multiplayer, you look at this game, like, they're not content just doing the same thing everybody else is doing. They're trying to innovate. And I think, it's going to take a while to get a lot of these formulas correct.
Yeah.
But I think once they do, they might create, you know, new genres that people really flock to. Because right now, you know, we're kind of stuck. Like, there's only, you know, like, if you look at the game people are playing online, if you like look at Twitch, like, people are playing like big open world survival games and building games and shooters, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you don't see stuff like this really being played, which, you know, so I think it's brave of them. I don't know if it necessarily works, but I think it's brave.
I think there's an era of my gaming history where this would have like fit in perfectly, where like the notion of mastering the samurai, like, you know, class and just doing that endlessly and fighting, I would have probably loved. I just, like, now it just, it, I looked at it and I just was like, man, this just sits so far out of a thing I want. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't know. Cause there was Bushido Blade, I played very heavily. I played a ton of Dynasty Warriors. I played, you know, even more recently, I enjoyed Dark Souls 2. Which one did I play? 1, 2? Either way. Like, they all sit inside of this thing. And like, I feel like when I was playing it, like I said, like, there were aspects of, especially when you played the PC, that chess match came out and you were like, oh, it was usually too easy against the PC, unfortunately, or the NPC. But it was just like, you'd see it and you'd be like, oh, that's the hint of it. Like, that's the thing I would have latched onto when I was younger. And like,
yeah,
maybe like my gaming time I wasn't as concerned about, you know, narrative. And like, I mean, I love narrative games back then too, but it, like, I was more okay with spending hours just mastering a thing as opposed to playing for either fun or for story, if that makes sense.
So. Yeah. And there's a couple, just to touch on that point, there's a couple of things that may be kind of troubling in the game, which is something that Ash mentioned. And it's that you can, you know, like some of those upgrades from the loot boxes are cosmetic, but other ones actually tweak the stats of your character. I wouldn't say changes them dramatically, but let's say, you know, you could feasibly build an assassin whose defense is much higher than it should be through acquiring the right kind of loot, right? And while that, you know, would decrease other stats, like I could foresee a situation in which like somebody finds like an optimal build, which almost kind of like exploits a certain character in the game, which is too bad. And then the other thing that is sort of confusing is this idea of the metagame. So when you start, and you guys saw this too, is that when you start playing the game, you pick up a faction to fight for. And really all that does is it kind of like locks down what side you're fighting on as far as the metagame goes. And it's almost like the metagame is this map that looks like a Risk map. And as you compete in different events in the game, you accrue these points and you can assign those points to different areas of this like segmented map interface. And after a certain period of time, I think it's like a couple of hours, you'll switch different positions, which, you know, change the way you earn points and things like that. But after a certain period of time, control points will be resolved and different factions will earn and lose different territory. And then I guess at the end of a season, they call it, that map will be completely resolved and the winning faction will get some kind of bonus, right? And my question to that is that how do you not just stop every single player from saying, we're going to compete for the knights, and then they'll, you know, like if it's drastically outnumbering the number of people fighting for the other two factions, how could that faction not win every single time? That's the confusing thing.
Seems like it's a lot to manage, you know?
Yeah, I feel like,
I don't know. I don't know how they would pull it off.
Yeah, but basically this whole metagame is divided up into seasons and like rankings and stuff. And I don't know that it has a whole lot to do with like actual like PvP rankings, but like the way that this map unfolds. So that part was confusing. I will end on a high note, and it's something that I did that you guys didn't do. And I'm going to just say that the 2v2 is like sneaky good. And I think that might be where the actual magic juice of this game is.
Really?
Yeah. Because like we discussed at length, Dominion is kind of a mess because there's so much chaos in the battlefield that people don't fight tactically, right? They kind of like, they either like do cheesy stuff, like sit on the ladder, they'll throw you off the ledge, or, you know, they'll get in the middle of that big battle and just hack and slash, right? And so there's not a lot of, you know, strategy involved in the game.
Yeah.
1v1 is nothing new, right? You know, every game has some kind of like one-on-one component, but when you fight in 2v2, it's really interesting because it basically puts you on a map with a partner that you don't immediately see. And so it basically starts you off in two separate 1v1 situations, and then there's a countdown, and then the game says go, right? And at that point you can do whatever you want, right? So if you want, you can go and fight like the opponent that it lined you up with, or you could run to the aid of your ally and try to get like into a 2v1 situation like right off the bat. Or you can like switch with your teammate and, you know, fight the other opponent or whatever, right? So there's a lot of like really, and because it still focuses on that like intimate combat, there's more of a need to actually do the blocking and, you know, making sure you're striking left, right, and up, like choosing those three, you know, striking positions. And I really feel like over time, this mode will evolve as the more interesting mode within the game, just because it blends like the PvP with just like the right amount of multiplayer by adding that second teammate to your team. I think it's really fascinating. So,
cool.
Yeah, that's kind of the high note, is that I just think that there's something really special there because it might be like sort of the sweet spot between like the chaos of Dominion and kind of like potential cheesiness of 1v1 combat. So, yeah. This game comes out on Valentine's Day, so that's a great day to play a game like this, I guess. So, we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, Ubisoft put out an article recently that claims that the single player component of this game would be enough to satisfy a purchase if you only played for that, but you know that was not available in the beta, so time will tell. We'll just have to wait and see what that's all about. I'm still kind of like, you know, for everything we said, I'm still interested in the game, and if that single player component shakes out to be as good as people claim it to be, then I will play it because I was, you know, a fan of the launch title Rise, Son of Rome, and I'm kind of looking for something that's like kind of in that vein of like a, you know, chain combat God of War style fighting game. So wait and see.
Rise was pretty
awesome.
Good.
Yeah. So I mean, if it can rival the launch title Rise, Son of Rome, then I think I'd still be willing to try it, you know. So there you go.
Cool.
Yep.
So you guys ready to sail the ship down the river?
Let's do that.
Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 258 of the Rated NA podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Some quick news. We will be going to PAX East. All three of us will be there. We have some news about an upcoming event that we are going to throw. No details at this point, but hit us up on social media and you can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate on Twitter, Facebook.com/NerdAppropriate, Twitch.tv/NerdAppropriate, and basically everywhere else. We have Instagram, we have Goodreads, we got all sorts of stuff. So find us there, say hi, give us a follow, and we'll be back next week with an all new show. And you guys have a great week. See you later.
See ya.
Bye. Is this 258 for real?
Yeah.
It is. Okay.
I updated the document.
I have updated the document.
Mm-hmm.